Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Up next, we've got an interview with Matt Pahala of the Soldotna Rotary and the organizer behind the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival to get a wrap-up on the Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival from earlier this month. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Going really well, Bill.
So what can you tell us about the wrap on the beer festival?
Well, the festival, again, this year was amazing. The weather cooperated. Beautiful sunny day. Lots of happy beer drinkers. And I think we reached just about that point of sellout there. We probably could have squeezed a few more people in there. We changed the layout just a little bit with the festival by eliminating 1.5 tents, which sort of condensed where breweries were set up, but it opened up space for the participants. So it gave it a nice feel of, it wasn't quite as packed at the peak time. So that was really nice. The music was great. Food was great. Everyone seemed happy. And overall, yeah, it was a great time.
Was there with my family and certainly enjoyed it. It's good to hear that it sold out again at 1,200 attendees. The prize winners were what?
So Kenai River Brewing took home the People's Choice Brewery once again. And kind of a surprise, maybe not a total surprise, but Nerdwood Brewing Company won again with their No Woman, No Cryo beer for the People's Choice beer. The surprise, I guess, is that year before last, that was the People's Choice beer. So we haven't had a repeat ever. So that was good to see. You know, they're doing good things in Girdwood.
It's a really good beer. So the money that's going to have been raised from the festival, you probably don't have the dollar amount figured out already, but you want to remind folks what it's going to be used for?
Yeah, you know, it's a fundraiser for the Rotary Club of Soldotna, and we use it for local projects. A couple of the things that we've got going this year, we've got a Japanese peace garden that's in the works. It's in the hopper. It's coming along pretty nicely. So we're working on some of the particulars for that. In the end, that's going to be a pretty big project for the Rotary Club of Soldotna and will entail a lot of community partners. So that's one that doesn't necessarily, it's not out there as glitzy as that is. We've definitely recognized the need for some help with some of the homeless in the area, and especially homeless teens. So over the summer, we launched a program that's trying to help out some of the kids in the community, and especially through the summer months when they lose some of the safety net that's provided by the school district. So that's another program that money's going to. And then we always give money to the RAFT program that's administered through the Central Peninsula Foundation, which is a transportation fund for people that might not have the money to pay for getting to and from the hospital for health care that's necessary. So those are some of the ongoing things this year. In the past, we helped install the outhouse at Salteshi and just a number of things. So we're always looking for more projects, and I'm sure that there'll be more to come. But yeah, just like I say, the funds go towards our local community projects.
Those all sound like worthy goals. And like I said, it was a great festival. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So thanks again for putting it on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure. And this was our 9th year. Things are, at this point, you know, reproduced and goes a little bit easier than those first few formative years. But we're looking for bigger and better things always, and hopefully continues to be something that's supported by not only by our brewers, but by the community. And it's all a partnership. And like I said, it is a fundraiser, but I look at it more as an opportunity for the breweries around the state to highlight something that they've got, something special, maybe introduce people to something new, and just promote the idea of the beer culture and promote it in a positive way that people can appreciate.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Matt. thanks to you and the rest of the Soldotna Rotary for putting on a great festival, and we look forward to next year.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Have a good one.
You too. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation, 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In our next feature, I'd like to talk to you about the art and science of the slow pour. It's said that good things take time. That is true when it comes to certain beers, especially ones that have been lovingly aged in tanks or barrels before they're packaged and ready to serve. However, once the decision to drink has been made, it's often a fairly quick affair. Bottles or cans are popped and poured into a glass. Tap handles are opened as the beer slides into a glass. Then you drink it. End of story. However, true beer lovers out there know that there is a great deal to be said for taking some time in that next to last step, the pouring of the beer into the glass. A proper beer pour should take a bit of time, hence the slow pour. The slow pour is a generic term for various techniques that can be used when dispensing a beer to ensure proper head formation. However, under that general term, there are many variants with nicknames like the 3-minute pour, the Stella Artois pour, or even a 7-minute pour. Stella Artois, the Belgian lager brand owned and distributed worldwide by mega brewer AB InBev, has even created a 9-step process, or should I say ritual, for pouring. Unfortunately, to quote their website, quote, most of the bars in North America aren't equipped with the proper systems to serve Stella using the 9 steps. So don't expect to see it everywhere you see Stella Artois on tap. If you would like to see it, there are plenty of videos on YouTube that demonstrate the 9-step pouring ritual. Charles Bamforth, the celebrated beer scientist and educator who is often called the Pope of Foam, cites Guinness as one of the best-known examples of the slow pour. When pints of the dry Irish stout are poured according to the brewer's suggestion, the whole process takes almost 2 minutes, 119 seconds to be exact, with the first half of that time going to building up a solid base of foam. Quote, what happens when you produce a lot of foam is that you're driving the proteins and bitter substances into the head, and when they get into the bubble wall, they interact and begin to stabilize the foam, says Bamforth. If you don't produce much foam in the first place, you're not giving the molecules a chance to interact. End quote. As the name would suggest, the key to a perfect slow pour and getting that fantastic dome of foam is to take your time with the pour. But Bamforth reminds us that you shouldn't be timid in the process. With a standard beer tap, it takes a vigorous pour down to the center of the bottom of the glass where the force separates the carbon dioxide, creating foam. Continually doing this will keep building upon that foam while the liquid drops down until you achieve the ratio desired. What you should avoid is the weak sliding down the side of the glass pour from a standard tap. That won't achieve the proper results. Quote, you want to see the beer splash into the glass, Bamford says. There are other tap handle options, such as the side handle, which is more of a ball valve mechanism that controls the level of foam or liquid that is allowed into a glass. This is more common in parts of lager-loving Europe and is often seen around this country attached to a Pilsner or Quell branded tower. In fact, that famous Czech brewery often promotes various pours with increasingly dense levels of foam. Each different style of pour, tasted side by side, winds up tasting different from the others. Bamforth makes it clear that he hasn't done scientific trials to see whether the flavor of a beer is altered if it receives the slow pour treatment, but notes that, quote, the larger factor in play here is the foam and the psychology and beauty of it and the storyline the pour tells. Maybe there is a flavor difference, maybe it has lost a bit of its fizzy nature, and you get a mellower mouthfeel, depending on how much of the CO2 has dropped out of the solution. But I think the visual triggers are more important than the taste ones, end quote. Here, Bamforth makes an excellent point. After all, drinking beer should engage all five senses. You drink with your eyes first, so the beer just looks great when it's served, but equal to that is the mouthfeel. When you knock some of the CO2 from the solution, the body is more supple and it volatilizes the aromatic compounds, and that provides a pop in the nose. Taken all together, this significantly enhances the sensation of consuming a beer. From a nitro pour to traditional CO2 pours to even cask ale poured through a beer engine outfitted with a sparkler, the slow-poured beer is dominated by creaminess. For the uninitiated, the idea of having to wait for a beer to be poured can be strange, but it really takes only from a minute and a half to 2 minutes for the beer to be poured and ready. If you're pouring beer from a bottle or can at home, you can use a similar technique for a nice slow pour. Pour the beer straight down into the glass, allowing it to foam and generate a nice head. When the head rises to the top of the glass, stop pouring and wait 30 seconds to allow the head to subside a bit, then pour more beer into the glass until the head reaches the top again. Repeat this process until the bottle or can is empty, or you have about 2 fingers of head on top of your beer. For most beers, this process should create a nice stable head, which will persist while you consume it, leaving lovely lace lines on the side of your glass. While those who have regular access to these pours might swear by the value of waiting, it's unlikely the slow pour will become the default beer pour. Most people are not prepared to do this patient thing, says Bamforth. While that may be true, those people are missing out on one of beer drinking's real hidden pleasures, the joy of the slow pour. We'll be right back with our next segment here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
There's a new show Wednesday nights on KDLL, and the only requirement to be featured on this show is the musician must be dead. Join me, Sal Cassano, your host, each Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. to listen to and learn about dead musicians.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Next up, we've got an interview with some of the newest brewers on the street with Lazy Mountain Brewing out of Palmer. Hey folks, why don't you introduce yourselves to our audience?
Well, hello, my name is Neil Gottschall, and my wife and I, Sarah, are running Lazy Mountain Brewing Company.
Hey Bill, this is Sarah.
Hi Sarah. So you guys have only been open, what, about a month now, something like that?
Well, we made our first sale in June.
Okay. So 2 months.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you talk about how you ended up getting into the commercial brewing game?
Well, gee, my wife and I, when we were in college, I made beer, and that was quite a while ago. And a couple of years ago, I decided that it'd be pretty nice to have a brewery, so we started researching it, filed the paperwork to become a corporation, went through all the requirements for the federal and state legalities to become a brewer, ordered the equipment, had some construction done. To shorten the story, now we're running a brewery.
So is your brewery located at your house, or are you in a commercial property?
Well, we have a few acres, and the brewery is located in a building that used to be a building for goat cheese and goat milk, and now it's a brewery.
It's kind of a full circle story a little bit, because the former owners of our property had developed the space for this grade A goat dairy, and they got it started, and then circumstances changed and they had to close shop, and we found the spot, and some years later we were able to kind of bring their dreams back through the brewery as well.
Well, that's great. So you guys are kind of like a farmhouse brewery.
Yeah, sort of like that. We've got a few animals here, not counting the brewer.
So why don't you describe your actual brew house to our listeners?
Well, the brewery is roughly 600, 650 square feet. I have a five-barrel electric brew house, and that includes the kettle, the mash tun, and the 300-gallon hot liquor tank. I have eight 5-barrel fermenters. They're actually unitanks. And we have a keg washer, of course, and we have kegs. And it's not a lot of space, but it's large enough to go ahead and accomplish what we would like to do.
So what is your schedule looking like? How many brews a week are you doing?
Well, as a matter of fact, we're getting ready to brew some Lazy Mountain Blonde number 10 on Saturday.
So are you brewing about once a week, once every other week?
Well, right now, we're brewing roughly once a week right now. And the rest of the time after cleaning, spending a lot of time visiting bars and restaurants to sell the product.
Speaking of bars and restaurants, if people are looking for your product to taste, where could they find it?
Well, right now we're in Palmer at Pizzeria Delphi, beautiful downtown Palmer, and also at Turkey Red. And both of those locations right now have two of our beers on tap. They're both carrying our Lazy Mountain Blonde and our Stout.
Excellent. And to be clear for our listeners, you guys do not have any kind of a tap room at your brewery.
Yeah, that's right. We wish we could, but we just, our space is limited and we kind of have to take one thing, one step at a time.
Obviously, you're going to be working to get your beers into more accounts around Palmer. Have you got any plans to take it any further afield?
Oh, I'd like to get it all over the place. We self-deliver, so that'll, as things go along, that might become a pretty busy end of the business. But we'll focus on the Valley, Palmer and Wasilla. And then, of course, Anchorage and Eagle River. And, there's a lot of people there. Maybe they'd like to have our beer.
Yeah, and we'll be doing some events as well. We're hoping to be at the Fur Rondi event this year.
That's the one that usually comes right opposite our Frozen River Festival. I was going to tout you to come down here for Frozen River Festival, but the Rondi people always seem to want to schedule right opposite us.
Well, that's negotiable.
Well, I'll put a bug in Doug Hoag's ear since he kind of handles bringing the breweries in. So we'd love to have you down here on the Kenai, and you really haven't lived till you've done a beer festival in February outside.
Right on.
Do you have any kind of a brewing philosophy? Is there a particular style of beer that you're looking to create? Something that really appeals to you? What drives your beer passion?
Well, it actually is driven by the people who drink it, and I'll make a brew. You can't hurt my feelings, and so I want to find out what they think. So far, there have been no complaints, so we're kind of hitting the nail on the head. The ale is working out real well, the blonde, the stout, and I haven't really thought about changing the recipes too much right now. It just seems like they're real well accepted.
I would add that, of course, we brew what we like to drink. I think our beers are very fresh and crisp, but we're kind of traditionalists. We just sort of stick to the basics, and we haven't played around with a lot of different added flavors, really.
The fact is, our beer is only water, hops, and yeast.
And barley.
And, of course, grain.
So you're brewing in accordance with the Reinheitsgebot, the German purity law?
Well, I guess you could say that. We've got fabulous water here, and because of that, we don't have to add anything to the water.
Do you have any one of your current flagship brews that you're particularly proud of, one that you like better than the others?
Boy, you know, I don't know. What do you think, sweetheart?
I like the stout. I think it's quite a fine stout. I think there's a knack to a good stout, getting that nice balance.
And I sort of like the ale, but then, of course, the blonde, gee, I like that too. If it's a warm day, the blonde is 4.5%. It's not very high in alcohol, and, you know, it just about quenches your thirst. One more would probably do it.
How do you come up with the names for your beers?
Well, originally, I just numbered the recipes, and that just sort of fell into place, so I have Lazy Ale number 11, Lazy Blonde number 10, Lazy Stout number 55. We've had a lot of different flavors of stout, and this one seems to be right in there where people like it.
I have to add, I think naming the beer really has potential to be just a lot of fun. We have really fun conversation over glasses of beer about, you know, potential names all with the word lazy in them. So we'll be having some fun with naming as we go forward, I think.
Have you got any new beers that you're planning to release in the near future?
Well, there's a a little variation on the blonde, and there's a slight variation on the ale. The slight variation on the ale is a little bit more hoppy, but I don't think I'd really call it an IPA. Some people might think so. The new blonde is a little sweeter than the current one, just as an experiment. We had a lady here the other day that drank it and wanted another one.
Well, that's always a good sign. Looking ahead, where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years? Where would you like to be?
This is a production brewery. We don't have a tasting room, and I don't know if we're going to have one or not. Maybe. But if things go well, we may make the building a little bit larger and maybe get a canning or bottling plant going and try to increase production that way. Just not sure. It'd be nice to have a tasting room. And we kicked that one around quite a bit, but right now we're just going to focus on production.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add to our listeners?
Look us up. Find us on Facebook. Check us out. Come to Palmer. Have some beer.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You can get a hold of us on lazymountainbrewing.com. There's a contact sheet there. Get a hold of us on the Facebook page. Our middle name is available. We'd be glad to provide beer for all the different bars and restaurants out there.
Well, hey, Neil and Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Really do appreciate it. I know our listeners out there, if they're passing through Palmer, will make a point to stop and check out some of your brews at the Pizzeria or Turkey Red's. And if any of you folks out there need kegs for special events, you can contact Lazy Mountain through their Facebook page or their website, and they'll be happy to hook you up. Neil, Sarah, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you a lot, Bill. This is Lazy Mountain Brewing Company. Great beer for the great land.
All righty. Y'all take care.
Thanks, Bill.
This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
So I wouldn't really say a boom, but maybe an uptick.
Most joints I sell come in 1 gram or half gram increments.
Outdoor recreation is a huge thing in Alaska, but how does this translate into economic development?
Every week on KDLL's Econ 91.9, we look at how businesses and individuals are responding to this challenging economic climate. Join us each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for KDLL's Econ 91.9.
Hello and welcome back to our final segment here on Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. This month we're going to wrap up with a beer style, Oktoberfest style. While everyone has heard of Oktoberfest, you may not be familiar with its particulars. What began as a royal wedding celebration in 1810 has grown into the largest beer festival in the world, with about 6 million visitors each year. It is held for the last 2 weeks in September through the first weekend in October in Munich, the capital of Bavaria in southern Germany. The original festival was held in October, hence the name, but was moved forward into September in the 1870s in search of consistently better weather. What breweries are allowed to have their beers served at the festival is also strictly regulated. Only the 6 large breweries that brew beer within the city limits of Munich are allowed to deliver beer to the festival. Smaller Munich breweries and those from outside the town are strictly banned. It's a popular myth that there has only been one distinct style of beer brewed for Oktoberfest, but the historical evidence shows that there have been many changes in the beers served at the festival. For the first 60 years or so, the then popular style of Bavarian Dunkel, a dark lager beer, seems to have been dominant. A shortage of this style during a particularly hot summer in 1872 led to the introduction of the Märzen or Vienna style lager, which was so popular that it became the dominant style of beer at the festival for over 100 years, eventually earning the name Oktoberfest style. Ironically, changing tastes in the late 20th century have meant that since 1990, all the beers served at the festival have been pale golden Helles lagers rather than the traditional Oktoberfest style. So what is this traditional Oktoberfest beer like? Much of the base malt is the so-called Munich malt, a highly aromatic malt which produces a light amber to nearly brown beer. It's hopped with traditional German hop varieties to produce moderate hop bitterness with little to no hop flavor, coming in at 18 to 24 IBUs. Fermentation using lager yeast produces a clean, rich, toasty, and bready flavor with a dry finish that encourages another drink. The overall malt impression is soft, elegant, and complex, with a rich aftertaste that is never cloying or heavy. If you're looking for a local example, St. Elias Brewing frequently offers this style in September, while versions from larger craft brewers like Sierra Nevada and actual imports from Germany are usually available in some local liquor stores. When it comes to pairing this beer with food, you'll find that Oktoberfest works well with all sorts of hearty dishes, like chili or barbecue brisket. It also pairs well with Caesar salad, macaroni and cheese, apple or pumpkin pie, and even pancakes or waffles. A more unusual pairing, but one that works especially well, is to match this German beer with the Americanized version of a classic Russian dish, beef stroganoff. The brown steak and mushroom flavors have a nice interplay with the beer's caramel malt notes. The rich and creamy sauce matches the toffee notes found in the beer, while the moderate carbonation helps lift the sauce, cleanses the palate, and makes you ready for the next bite. Whether you call it Marzen, Vienna Lager, or Oktoberfest, this classic German beer style is definitely one of the most popular fall seasonal beers out there and definitely worth seeking out to be enjoyed. Well, that's it for this month's show. We'll be back in September with more beer news from the peninsula and beyond. As a final quote, I'd like you to remember the words of the great Gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson. Good people drink good beer. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, saying cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Might be the one.